Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. This is Media Literacy Week, and it could not come at a better time as voters sift through the final days of campaign rhetoric. We'll talk about honing those media literacy skills a little bit later after a discussion with C.J. Barsivic, Democratic candidate for Congress from Illinois' 12th District. The seat is currently held by Republican incumbent Mike Bost. He'll be with us later in the week. Green Party candidate Paula Bradshaw was on the program last Friday. C.J. Barsivic is an attorney whose political bloodline includes his grandfather, uncle, and father, all of whom served in elected positions in St. Clair County. C.J. joins me in studio. Nice to meet you, C.J. Thanks
Likewise.
For coming in. Thanks
Great.
For coming in.
Great to see you. Thank you very much.
Well, I have to start with an editorial in the News Democrat, which I'm sure you're familiar with, in which they basically said you're a real nice guy, but you need some seasoning, a little more time and grade before running for this office. What do you think about that?
I read that. I think one of the problems with Washington today is that so many people use political office as stepping stones. And frankly, that's the only reason why they run, to one day hold a higher position. I think if that's the kind of ladder that we encourage people to take to represent folks at the federal level, we're going to continue to see partisan gridlock, where the only objective of our representatives is to continue to find elected office. The reason why I want to run, frankly, is because I want to help. And when the opportunity arose to possibly be able to help at the federal level, I jumped at it. It's been a real privilege to run. I respectfully disagree with those editorialists that suggest that experience is the only prerequisite to be a good representative for a district.
You're currently you're an attorney, and you have your own practice. I assume it's your own practice, and you're also a part-time public defender. How does the public defender role prepare you for what could be ahead as a congressman in Washington?
Well, I think one of the things that it certainly does is it gets you ready for anything. it's been a privilege to work as a public defender, to work for folks who don't have money to afford an attorney. You know, when I was in college, law school, I think a lot of kids that are going through that process really want to practice constitutional law. And you really get to practice constitutional law as a public defender to ensure that the rights of individuals aren't violated and to stand up for people who don't have money to afford an attorney.
Is it giving you any particular views with the idea of criminal justice reform, which is being talked about a lot both in this area and nationally?
Yeah, criminal justice reform is a big issue. I think that, you know, as a public defender, it does remind me that everyone needs advocacy, that the foundation of this country are the civil liberties that each citizen is entitled to. It's something that's become a passion. We want to make sure that that everybody has a fair representation, but also that if someone makes a bad decision, that does not preclude them from being an active member of society moving forward. Mm-hmm. And it's not just criminal justice reform in the sense that we need to address sentencing structures or how long or where someone goes to jail, but also how we rehabilitate those people that do end up incarcerated and how we can make sure that they become valuable members of society once they're out of the penitentiary.
We have an awful lot of people incarcerated in this country. I think proportionately it's the heaviest in the world.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we need to start and continue to have those conversations about what we're going to do with nonviolent offenders. Mm-hmm. You know, we're starting to see folks that see jail time, and not just at a county level, but at a state and federal level, for nonviolent offenses, and that's something we're going to have a conversation about at a local, state, and federal level.
Is this a principal plank in your platform, or what do you see takes precedence over that priority?
I think the important thing here is that we have the conversation. I don't think I've decided what policy will and will not be enacted if I'm lucky enough to get elected, or certainly what I'd advocate for. But the things that I'm advocating for, fair justice, representation at every level, I think that's consistent throughout the policy issues that have encouraged me to run.
I think most people would agree that your principal opponent in this race is probably Mike Bost, who is the incumbent. What are the starkest differences between you and Mr. Bost?
You know, we brought this up in our debate just last week, and frankly, he had no response, neither at the debate nor after. He's voted against things like equal pay. He's voted against the idea that women should be paid the same thing as men. And frankly, he has no excuse for it, and I can't sit here and tell you what he was thinking. Those are the kind of issues that are important. He votes for bad trade deals. He voted to fast-track the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was just a fundamental flaw in his voting procedure. He's voted to freeze Pell Grants for people that are trying to make college more affordable, for kids like me who had to pay for school on their own. You know, when you go to college, when you decide to take on student loans, I think you're making a fundamental investment in yourself, something that not only will be advantageous to you, to the persons taking out the student loans, but also to the community in which you're going to go serve. And my opponent voted against making college loans more affordable. One of the things that I've heard from voters throughout the district is just what a struggle it is making the decision whether to go to work or whether to go to college. And I think for millennials, people of my generation, student loan debt is now taking over credit card debt as the number one debt for people outside of a mortgage. And this is something that we really need to address if we're going to continue to try to improve our personal infrastructure in this country.
It's also taken it's gone beyond auto loan debt, by the way. Mm-hmm. So what do we do about it?
Well, there are a couple of things we can do about it. I think the biggest thing we can do about it is start finding new revenue streams to pay for our secondary education. We can do that by making the very, very wealthy tax accountable, by making corporations tax accountable. One of the big issues we've heard about in the presidential election is that Donald Trump hasn't paid federal income tax. Listen, he didn't break any rules, but at least it appears that way.
We know of.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It appears that way. But he still avoided to pay federal income tax. We need to make that an issue here. We need to make sure that corporations pay their fair share. And if we can do that, if we can generate revenue streams in places where they already should be coming in, I think we'll have additional revenues. We'll be able to have the conversation about how to allocate those revenues and hopefully invest in our school systems.
You've mentioned Mr. Trump. What do you make of the campaign, the presidential campaign at this juncture?
You know, frankly, I understand why people are upset, particularly in my district. You know, southwestern Illinois, the real tragedy of southwestern Illinois is that the economy appears to have left a lot of people. You know, before I went to law school, I was lucky enough to work at Granite City Steel out of the Pipefitters Hall, 439 in East St. Louis. We worked underneath the coke ovens for 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. It was a tough job, but it was a good one. And it allowed a lot of people to provide for their families. Some of those guys are laid off, and these are not lazy people. You know, these are folks that want to go to work, that want to put food on their family's table, that want to provide and just don't have the opportunity. So I get why people are upset. They see the economy is leaving places like my district behind, and they see people like traditional politicians as an easy scapegoat. So I get why a non-traditional candidate like Donald Trump might get some traction. But there are two ways I think that we can try to address the problems moving forward, hope or hate. And I'm concerned with politicians who motivate voters by hate instead of opportunity. They talk about opportunity lost. Instead of possibility, they talk about possibility lost. And that's the kind of campaign, you know, we're trying to run one that motivates folks out of hope that there is a way to progress and that I can be a part of that way.
What could you do in Congress to help that that guy who lost his job at Granite City Steel or all the people who are looking for work?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that we have to do as a member of Congress is to advocate. You know, there really are two things that a representative does once he gets elected. The first is to vote. Now, no constituent is going to agree with every single vote that a congressman takes. I have issue with some of the votes that my opponent has already taken, jobs that I think do ship jobs overseas. Equal pay has been an issue. Student loans have been an issue. But the other thing that we can do is advocate, is go out and talk to businesses, be essentially the cheerleader for the district, have intelligent conversations with business leaders, talk to big businesses like, you know, Amazon and Google, and tell them why our district is a great and viable place for their businesses, why they ought to come in and they ought to work for our workers, for our constituents, and with us as well.
Well, somebody's already talked to Amazon. I mean, they're coming in Edwardsville.
That's right. And you hit it the nail on the head. That's advocacy. That's what happens when you go out and work for your district. And my opponent has failed to do that. We had a big issue on both sides of the river with the National Geospatial Agency, and my representative, Mr. Bost, failed to deliver the mail there. We've got Granite City Steel is sitting idle right now. We've got advocacy issues. We have somebody who can't get the job done. You just brought up a great example of what happens when a representative goes extra legislative, outside the legislative process, and really works for his district. And that's something that I think we can do better. And I think it's a I'm the viable alternative there.
What could you have done better, do you think, better than Mr. Bost with regard to the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency and keeping it over in the Scott area, as was talked about?
Well, unfortunately, they wouldn't let me in the room, so I can't tell you exactly what Mr. Bost did or did not say. But I can tell you the end result, he didn't get it. He couldn't seal the deal. St. Clair County made that location site-ready. For the mission and the objective of Scott Air Force Base and the NGA, that absolutely was the best location for the job. When it comes to security, infrastructure, availability, job readiness, St. Clair County, the elected officials there did a fantastic job. Their federal representative let them down.
Right. The coal industry and your part of the state also in some difficulty these days. What can be done to salvage what's left of it?
So one of the big issues is we need to make sure that Southern Illinois coal is still a viable method of energy production, meaning we have to make sure that our coal-burning plants, whether they're power plants or manufacturing plants, burn clean coal. We need to invest in clean coal technology. We need to make sure that we recapture carbon that is put off by those plants. And if that's the case, Southern Illinois coal will continue to be viable. You know, whether we like it or not, we live in this reality that global climate change is very much a real thing, but we can't leave our workers behind. I have the conversation often. If we have dirty air, dirty water, and all the jobs we can handle, we die. If we have clean air, clean water, and no jobs, we riot. We have to be able to transition. We have to continue to utilize coal, continue to utilize the job manufacturing process that's in southwestern Illinois, and work on investing in new technologies, investing in new jobs. And that can be done with public-private enterprises, and it should be.
The industry is suffering also because of natural gas. Do you have any kind of natural gas exploration or development going over in your district?
I think that people are always looking for new ways and new technologies to promote jobs. Right now, I think the concentration on energy production is on coal-burning plants. It's the focus. It's been the traditional focus of southwestern Illinois. It continues to be the focus. And by the way, we have a very large contingent of retired coal miners who are going through pension issues that need the support of the federal government. You know, this is a very real issue, the coal industry in southwestern Illinois, and it can be tackled appropriately with both the climate and the job perspective as our goal.
What sort of unemployment do you have in your district?
You know, more important than unemployment in our district is underemployment. Those people that I talked about that we worked with at Granite City Steel are having difficulty finding full-time work to supplement those jobs. We hear from families all the time that are too proud to take handouts but that are really struggling paying their full finances. I just talked to a client of mine in private practice who had to sell his house and move into an apartment because he's underemployed. He can find work. And by the way, any work is noble. I mean, this guy gets up in the morning every day so that he can provide for his family, but it just doesn't pay the bills like the old jobs may have. And we've seen what happens when political candidates or those who hold elected office try to make the economy a political tool. We saw it in Illinois. I had to sue Governor Rauner just over a year and a half ago in St. Clair County when he tried to stop paying state workers, when he tried to turn the budget into a political device. He tried to say, well, if you're not going to get along with me, I'm not going to pay anybody. And that's the kind of leadership that I think we need in the district that tackles not just unemployment but also underemployment.
We're talking with C.J. Barsivic, who is the Democratic candidate for Congress from the 12th District in Illinois. We continue our conversation, and let's move on to some other things because our time is somewhat limited. One of the big issues of the last several years, and certainly going to be one for the foreseeable future, is health care, particularly the Affordable Care Act. And it's taken some hits recently with the revelation that premiums are going up fairly substantially. You go to Congress, so how are you going to be working on that? What's your position on Obamacare?
So the Affordable Care Act did some great things. And anybody who says otherwise is forgetting those that were unable to receive coverage because of a pre-existing condition prior to the passage of the ACA. Anybody who says otherwise is forgetting about the people that graduated from college but couldn't find a job and were able to stay on their parents' insurance policy. I mean, those were real advantages, The ACA saved lives, and millions more people are insured because of it than before it. That being said, particularly in districts like mine that lack a real metropolitan area, premiums are becoming too expensive. Relatively healthy people with relatively good jobs can no longer afford health insurance. We're seeing insurance companies leave the exchange. We have to get past partisan bickering. And by the way, political hit, my opponent was the most partisan member of the Illinois delegation. We have got to get away from that sort of partisan bickering and talk about what was effective, what was not, and how can we solve the problem.
It's more than partisan bickering. It's gridlock. I mean, if you would join an institution that is lower in popularity than, forgive me, used car dealers, but people who don't have a great reputation.
And lawyers.
And lawyers perhaps, and perhaps broadcasters as well. But it's pretty low. I mean, everybody recognizes that. You know, what do you do as a newcomer if you are elected? What do you do, aside from just pounding the table when it's likely a Republican majority will be maintained in this election in the House?
So I think one of the things that is advantageous to anybody who goes to represent constituents in Washington is that you have to maintain your perspective. And you're exactly right. It's partisan gridlock. So one of the things that I think is important, if I'm lucky enough to get this job, is to make sure that the constituents are always first, that I get away from party and partisan politics and work towards the issues. And if that upsets leadership in my own party, so be it. If that upsets leadership in my opposition's party, that's fine too. We have to get that kind of perspective. Frankly, to get back to the Belleville News Democrats' suggestion that more experience is necessary, this is what we create when we breed long-term ladder climbers whose only objective is to get to and then stay in Congress, who are only concerned with reelection. We don't get anything done. You know, if I get elected, I'll be the youngest member of Congress, and one of, if not the only member of Congress with student loan debt. That certainly is perspective that is lacking in Washington, D.C. And we have to have this kind of new perspective if we're going to be successful. My generation is going to inherit some of the burdens that were placed upon it by Congresses before us. Mm. And we need to step up to the plate to work for our country, to take responsibility, but also to get rid of this partisan gridlock. And we can do it if we're given the opportunity.
Given where you come from and what your background is, do you have a specific aim or a specific target with regard to what committees you might be involved in or like to be involved in if you should win election?
Well, certainly veterans issues are very important to our district. Agriculture is very important to our district. The goal, I think, if I'm lucky enough to go, is to serve in whatever capacity that I can best represent not just the district but also the country. And I think my perspective would be beneficial in various capacities. So I think as long as we keep the goals in mind that got us into the race in the first place, we can be successful.
What about Scott Air Force Base? It seems to be in pretty good shape right now. Is you happy with the way things are developing there?
So there have been some recent developments that have been advocated by the county that have worked out really well. In conjunction with the county, I think the short-term success and dependency of Scott is secure, but this is a long-term and viability issue. And if we don't have an advocate for Scott Air Force Base, we're going to lose the biggest economic engine in the Metro East. We saw when Jerry Costello was a member of Congress, he kept Scott Air Force Base open by force of will alone. I mean, this had nothing to do with bills that were passed. This was all about making sure that the district and the base was advocated for. We saw now with Congressman Boss that he can't do it. And that's just the reality of the political conversation. We lost NGA. That would have been great for the security of Scott. And we got to find a way to do better moving forward.
But doesn't that take us back to the role of seasoning? Costello was there for a long time. He had tenure, and he was experienced in dealing with the halls of Congress.
Yeah, well, Mr. Bost has been in elected office for a long time. And if anybody's used to partisan gridlock, it's a member of the Illinois House and Senate. And that's where Mr. Bost served from the early 90s until he was elected to Congress. So I don't think we should give him an excuse as to why he couldn't deliver the mail there. He talks about all the time about his success as a negotiator, and he certainly couldn't deliver the mail there.
Right. Let's do a couple of quick hits here. I've got some things that I know you're interested in. Our time is getting away. Minimum wage. Should we need a national minimum wage of, let's say, $15 an hour or whatever it might be?
Well, we certainly need to address – the minimum wage needs to be increased. $15 an hour is viable in some places, it may not be as viable in others, but we absolutely need to increase the minimum wage.
How about Medicare, Social Security, and maintaining those at a level that will accommodate the coming generation, which is a large one?
Well, my opponent voted to turn those issues, Medicare, into a voucher system. We need to secure Social Security and Medicare. We have to. We've made a promise to our citizens that they would have those resources, and we need to live up to that promise.
You have a labor background. You've spent a lot of time with rolled up sleeves and getting your hands dirty in various jobs. What about right to work?
Could not be more against right to work. The opportunity to collectively bargain and to organize and to make sure that working people have the same voice at the bargaining table as corporations and big business is one of the things that fundamentally motivates me to represent folks.
We're going to have to wrap it up. I'll give you a little less than a minute to do your thing. Why should people vote for C.J. Barr Civic?
I represent a legitimate and viable departure from business as usual. My opponent is a longtime, lifelong elected member of office, and we've gotten nowhere. We need new, active, healthy voices in office from a state, local, and federal level. And this is an opportunity to have one in the United States House of Representatives. We don't often get that opportunity, and my candidacy represents it. I look forward to serving the people of the 12th District.
That is C.J. Barr Civic, who is the Democratic candidate for Congress from Illinois' 12th Congressional District. His incumbent opponent, Republican Mike Bost, will be with us later this week. The Green Party's Paula Bradshaw was with us last Friday. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.